Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free, at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Welcome back to Mama Mystery. I am your host, Kelly. And before we get started, last week I want to let you know that I released a bonus episode on our Patreon. So a quick note about Patreon. When you join, you get access to my whole catalog of episodes, including bonus episodes, and they are all ad-free. So last week we talked about the case of Suzanne Morphew. Suzanne Morphew disappeared on Mother's Day of 2020 after allegedly going for a bike ride in Colorado, but investigators quickly suspected something darker. Suzanne was known as a devoted mom and wife, but privately, her marriage to Barry Morphew was crumbling. Suzanne secretly planned a divorce, telling friends that she feared Barry, while she also maintained an affair with an old boyfriend. So when she vanished, Barry insisted that he was innocent, but investigators uncovered unsettling evidence with odd cell phone activity, Barry disposing of trash in multiple locations, and a tranquilizer dart cap found inside their dryer. Barry was arrested in 2021, but charges were shockingly dropped due to prosecution errors until Suzanne's remains were finally discovered in 2023. Autopsy results revealed that she was drugged with a powerful animal tranquilizer, the exact type Barry used illegally in hunting. So in June of 2025, Barry was rearrested, charged once again with Suzanne's murder. He maintains his innocence, supported publicly by his daughters and Suzanne's daughters, and I cover it all in that episode. So go to patreon.com/mamamystery, or you can download the Patreon app and find me there. So now, without further ado, today I'm going to be telling you about the disappearance of Christina Whitaker. This story was actually recommended to me. It's somewhat local to me because this did happen in a small Missouri town. And if you ever want to recommend a case for me to talk about on Mama Mystery, you can go to mamamystery.com, scroll down to that white box, and you can leave me a message there anytime. Now, without further ado, let's get into the disappearance of Christina Whitaker. Imagine a chilly Friday night in a small town in Missouri, and a young mother is excited for her first night out after having a baby. 21-year-old Christina Whitaker was that young mom in November of 2009. She lived in Hannibal, Missouri, a town best known as Mark Twain's childhood home, but about to gain notoriety for a far more disturbing story. Christina had a 6-month-old daughter at home and was looking forward to just blowing off some steam with her friends. But little did anyone know that by the next morning, she would vanish without a trace, sparking a missing persons case that is still unresolved over 15 years later. Christina was 21 years old in 2009, and she was described by those close to her as a warm, funny, and trusting person. She grew up in Hannibal and sometimes went by the nickname Tina. At the time of her disappearance, she was living with her mother, Cindy Young, and focusing on caring for her infant daughter, Alexandria. Christina's boyfriend, Travis Blackwell, was Alexandria's father and a steady presence in her life, and he'd been supportive enough to babysit so that Christina could have a rare night out with her friends. Life hadn't been entirely easy for Christina. She struggled with several health issues, including fibromyalgia and mental health conditions like bipolar disorder, depression, and anxiety. She had begun taking psychiatric medications as a teenager, but according to her family, she disliked the side effects and often took her meds irregularly, which is so frowned upon. Don't do it. It creates so much bigger issues. I actually take an antidepressant myself, so I have absolutely no shame when it comes to medications, especially if it's for your mental health. But if you don't take them as they're prescribed, it can actually be more harm than good. So if you take the meds, take them like you're supposed to. But this meant that Christina could be emotionally volatile at times. Sydney described her daughter as childlike and naive sometimes, noting that the medications, when she did take them, made Christina more susceptible to manipulation by others. Christina had even made some suicidal statements before during some of her lower points. And despite these challenges, she adored her baby and stayed in daily contact with her mom. So by all accounts, Christina's personality was bubbly and kind, and she was completely full of life and always quick to smile or care for others, despite dealing with some of these hard things that she had going on in her personal life. But she was determined to enjoy an evening out with her friends, trusting that everything at home would be fine. On November 13th of 2009, it was an ominous Friday the 13th, and it was supposed to be a fun girls' night for Christina. That evening around 8:30 p.m., Travis Blackwell dropped her off at a local watering hole called Rookie's Sports Sports Bar on Broadway in downtown Hannibal. It was Christina's first night out since giving birth, and her friends were already at Rookie's awaiting for her arrival. Before the night got too late, Christina made sure to check in at home, and at about 10:30 p.m., she called Travis to let him know that she'd be home around midnight. She even joked that she'd bring him some food from town, and she told him that she'd call again if she couldn't find a ride home by then. So it was clear that Christina fully intended to return to her baby that night. However, as the night wore on at Rookie's Bar, trouble started brewing. Witnesses later reported that Christina became intoxicated and got into an altercation with someone at the bar. She allegedly started harassing other patrons at the bar, enough that the bar staff decided to actually throw her out of the bar. So around 11:45 p.m., Christina was kicked out of Rookie's for her belligerent behavior, and she was upset and probably combative. One bartender said that she had to be escorted out the back door due to her conduct, and Christina's friends did not follow her out. In fact, one friend later admitted that they refused to leave with Christina because, as they put it, they didn't need to go to jail that night. It seems that her friends were worried that Christina's drunken behavior might get them all in trouble, so they stayed behind while she stumbled out alone. Now, this is 2009, so I know that as time has gone on, it's become more and more important and loud, you know, when it comes to saying, like, don't ever leave your friends alone. If you're going out, you guys have to stay together. Like, nobody ever should get left behind. And I don't remember it being as prevalent in 2009 as that is today, but it's just important to remember the context and the timeline. Now, out on the street near midnight, Christina found herself without a ride and separated from her friends. So she began asking anyone and everyone for a ride home. Friends, acquaintances, even strangers outside the bar. Multiple people recalled Christina approaching them or others, pleading for a ride, but no one agreed to drive her that night. Some later said they saw Christina running down the street alone, crying, clearly upset by whatever had happened at the bar. So determined to find someone to help, Christina wandered into at least two other nearby establishments after leaving Rookie's. So she briefly went into River City Billiards, a pool hall, and then a place called Sportsman's Bar, both in the same downtown area of Hannibal. So at each spot, she continued asking for a ride home, and it was closing time by then, close to 1 a.m., and Sportsman Bar was about to shut down for the night. The bartender on duty, Vanessa Swank, happened to be a friend of the Whitaker family and recognized Christina when she walked in. Vanessa later recalled that Christina was on her cell phone, arguing heatedly with someone during those final moments at the bar. Christina appeared distraught. At one point, Vanessa saw her suddenly break down sobbing and then sprint out the back door of Sportsman's Bar into the night. Vanessa called out asking if she needed anything or wanted or needed a ride, but Christina said, "No, I'm okay," and then ran off crying into the darkness. And that was the last confirmed sighting of Christina Whitaker. In the span of a few hours, her fun night out had devolved into this confusing and emotional scene, and she vanished somewhere in those dark early morning hours. What exactly happened after Christina left that bar is a mystery that still haunts Hannibal. Strangely, different witnesses have given conflicting accounts about her movements around closing time that night, which has only fueled speculation. Some patrons at Rookies claim that they saw Christina come back inside the bar briefly, accompanied by an unknown man even after she'd been kicked out, but this account is unverified. Another witness told police that they thought Christina actually left the bar with a group of three or four men. Meanwhile, one of Christina's girlfriends reported seeing her outside Rookies talking to two men sitting in a dark-colored car just before she was forced to leave. And these accounts paint very different pictures. Was Christina alone, or was she with others when she headed out? Did someone coax her into a car, or was she running solo through the streets? The stories just don't line up, and this inconsistency has made it hard to pin down her exact timeline in those final minutes. But what we do know is that by around 1 a.m., Christina was on foot and upset somewhere in downtown Hannibal, and then she was simply gone. When the sun rose the next morning on November 14th, Christina had still not made it home. Her boyfriend Travis woke up that Saturday morning expecting to find her back, or at least to have heard from her, and immediately realized that something was wrong. Christina never returned home after the bar, and she hadn't called to explain why. So Travis reached out to Christina's mom, Cindy, to tell her that Christina was missing. Cindy was actually out of town that weekend, but as soon as she heard that her daughter hadn't come home, she raced back to Hannibal to start searching for Christina. Travis, who had to go to his job that day, arranged for a family member to watch baby Alexandria so that he could also join in trying to figure out what was going on. Then, that same morning, a potential clue turned up. Christina's cell phone was found lying on a sidewalk in town. A man had discovered the cell phone on the ground outside of an apartment complex on South 7th Street, which is in the vicinity of Sportsman's Bar, the last place that Christina was seen. This was the only piece of physical evidence ever recovered in the case. Unfortunately, the phone would prove to be a dead end. By the time police got a hold of it, the phone had passed through multiple hands. The man who found it had not only gone through it, but had also given it to someone else, and it changed hands a couple times before finally reaching law enforcement. So any data or fingerprints that might have been on the device were compromised. Investigators said that they weren't able to pull any useful evidence from Christina's phone at all, which is a really frustrating setback, especially when you consider how much valuable information can be in a phone. So to think that nothing came from it is just kind of mind-boggling. But one puzzling aspect of those first 48 hours is also that no one called the police immediately on Saturday when Christina failed to show up. In fact, Christina was not officially reported missing until the next day, Sunday, November 15th, more than a day after she disappeared. Given that Christina was a young mother who usually spoke with her mom daily or saw her baby every day, the delay in reporting her missing raised eyebrows later. Even a reporter thought that it seemed strange for a devoted mom to vanish and not be reported missing right away. However, Cindy and the family have explained that at first they just weren't sure what to think. They hoped maybe Christina had crashed at a friend's house after her night out, or that she had turned up once she cooled down from whatever it was that upset her that night. Hannibal's police captain at the time, Jim Hark, actually noted that it's not uncommon for adults to be gone for a day or so before family call authorities. He said, actually, quote, "It's not unusual to have a person gone for a day or two," which, I mean, I don't know if I very much agree with that, especially considering all the events that happened the night before. She's out with friends. Nobody can get a hold of her. By the latest, I would think that that afternoon they would be calling the authorities to help search for her. But regardless, with Christina now officially missing, the Hannibal Police Department mobilized pretty quickly. All hands were on deck. Investigators began retracing Christina's last known steps, interviewing the friends who were with her, and any witnesses from the bar that night as well. They learned about her being put out of Rookies, her pleas for a ride, and also the sightings at Sportsman's Bar. Police also immediately started searching the area for any signs of Christina. On Tuesday, November 17th, just 4 days after she vanished, HPD organized a search of the outlying areas around Hannibal and even the Mississippi River, which borders the town. Officers combed through woods, fields, and riverbanks looking for clues or the worst outcome, Christina's body, but nothing concrete ever turned up. Divers or search teams scanning the cold November waters of the Mississippi found no trace of Christina either. Captain Jim Hark spoke to the media around that time, explaining that detectives were following every lead they got, even ones that took them outside of their jurisdiction. Hannibal is a relatively small city with about 17,000 people, and the case soon drew assistance from neighboring departments. Police quickly entered Christina's name and details into national databases for missing people, and by late November, they had reached out to law enforcement in other cities in case Christina turned up elsewhere. In those initial weeks, however, there was no sign of her. As Hark said on November 19th, he said, quote, "Right now we have no reason to suspect foul play, but we're not ruling it out because we just don't know," end quote. And this statement just really reflected the baffling nature of this case, that there was no evidence of a struggle, no known enemies who might want to hurt Christina, and yet it was equally implausible that she would just choose to run away from her life. The police were truly working with zero hard evidence of what happened after 12 a.m. that night. Back in the community, Christina's family and friends sprang into action also. They did the things that any family would do. They drove around town calling her name, checked with every acquaintance they could think of. They plastered missing persons flyers on the storefronts. Local volunteers also joined the effort, and the story hit the local news, spreading worry through this tight-knit town. The fact that Christina left behind her six-month-old baby was a huge red flag. No one who knew her believed that she would ever voluntarily abandon her daughter, even for a day. As days turned into weeks with no word from Christina, her family's fear and heartbreak only grew. Hannibal police kept at it, dedicating their entire detective division to the case, and they were checking every tip, no matter how strange or obscure it was. By late December of 2009, though, the investigation was starting to stall. There were no solid clues, only rumors and whispers about what might have happened on that ill-fated night. Now, I know what you're all thinking. In missing persons cases, suspicion often falls first on those who are closest to the victim. So naturally, some people wondered about Travis Blackwell, Christina's boyfriend and the father of her child. Had there been any trouble in their relationship that could explain her disappearance? Early on, a few of Christina's friends made mention that Travis and Christina's relationship did have its rocky moments, even alleging that there was a history of domestic violence between the two. Now, this hearsay put a cloud of suspicion over Travis in the eyes of some people who were following the case, and it didn't help that the case wasn't making any progress. So, lacking other suspects, folks began to speculate. Desperate for answers and exposure for the case, Christina's family, including her mother Cindy, Travis, and even an ex-boyfriend of Christina's, agreed to appear on the Steve Wilkos Show. Now, this is a national daytime talk show that was known for its confrontational style. In February of 2010, about 3 months after Christina vanished, they went on the Wilkos Show, helping to generate some new leads, get some eyes on the case. Now, the appearance, however, turned into a bit of a circus. Steve Wilkos, who was a former security guard from the Jerry Springer Show, is known for being pretty aggressive, and he zeroed in on Travis Blackwell as a potential culprit. On air, Steve Wilkos accused Travis of failing a lie detector test, one that was arranged by the show, and even went so far as to suggest that Travis might have dumped Christina's body in the Mississippi River. So it was a pretty intense and emotional episode, not exactly the best possible light for the family. And Cindy later did an interview where she kind of realized that what she hoped would get more eyes on the case really was she was taken advantage of, and that her story was used for ratings for the show. So I feel bad for her in that sense, that she probably thought that she was going to, that something good was going to come from going on this show, that more people might get eyes on it and that it would have a good response. And then it just completely fell apart. Now, the Wilco show experience left Cindy and Travis feeling blindsided. They hadn't expected the confrontation to get so heated or accusatory. In some of the clips, they're actually, there's like fighting going on. They're chasing after each other. There's no point in playing any of the audio because you really just have to see it for yourself. But in interviews afterward, Cindy expressed her disappointment with how the show handled things. She also told a local newspaper, the Quincy Herald Whig, saying, quote, "I know he would never do anything to hurt her," adding that Travis was actually at home with the baby the night that Christina disappeared, and Cindy's son, Christina's brother, and his girlfriend were in the same house and could vouch for Travis's whereabouts that night. In fact, Travis voluntarily took a polygraph test with the Hannibal police and passed it, according to both Cindy and law enforcement. So police never named him as a suspect. The show's drama unfortunately led some viewers to harass Travis. Cindy said that people even asked for his address, presumably to go after him, but Christina's family never doubted his innocence. Travis himself was heartbroken over losing Christina, saying, quote, "My relationship with Christina at the time was really great. I miss her every day and wish she'd come home," end quote. For the most part, the community accepted that Travis likely had nothing to do with it. He had an alibi and no motive beyond hearsay. So in the end, the Wilco show did not produce any credible leads, only hurt feelings. And still, it just showed how desperate the family was to find answers. So with Travis largely cleared, investigators and amateur sleuths alike turned their gaze elsewhere. If not the boyfriend, then what could have happened to Christina? This is when the rumor mill in Hannibal truly kicked into overdrive. In a small town, especially one suddenly thrust into the spotlight, rumors can run rampant. And Christina's case generated some pretty wild ones over the years. So let's talk about some of the unsettling theories that emerged. One was that it was an opportunistic crime. Christina was asking strangers for a ride that night. So could a dangerous person have taken advantage of her vulnerability? Cindy Young certainly feared so. She said that she believed she could have just been at the wrong place at the wrong time, and the wrong people just got a hold of her that night. One prevalent theory, which is one that we'll dive deeper into pretty soon, was that Christina fell prey to human traffickers or other criminals who picked her up and harmed her. So another theory was that this was a retaliation or a cover-up. Some locals whispered that Christina might have been entangled in something shady before she disappeared. There was talk of drug involvement, perhaps she owed someone money or knew too much about a local drug dealer. An even more dramatic rumor suggested that Christina had been acting as a confidential informant for a police department, whether that was in Hannibal or elsewhere, meaning she might have been feeding info on criminal activity to the cops. And if true, could someone she informed on have found out and silenced her? Now, this theory has never been confirmed, and police haven't commented on it, but it's a story that circulated nonetheless. In a similar vein, there were whispers of a potential police scandal, alleging that Christina had been involved in a sexual relationship with some local law enforcement officers. It sounds far-fetched, and again, there's no evidence of this, but the mere suggestion fueled online discussions that maybe corrupt cops were involved in her disappearance and covering it up. The independent filmmaker who later investigated the case noted, quote, "In Hannibal, it seems like everyone's got something to hide," end quote, just reflecting how pervasive these rumors were, especially in a small town with only 17,000 people. Like, if you know anything about small towns, I'm sure you can only imagine. But Hannibal is a place where seemingly nothing stays secret for long, yet truth and gossip were getting hopelessly tangled. Another theory is that no one else was responsible at all, that Christina, impaired by alcohol and possibly the interaction of her medications with that alcohol, might have just been met with an accident. Remember, the night she vanished was bitterly cold, near 39 degrees. So if she was disoriented, could she have walked into a remote area and succumbed to hypothermia? Hannibal sits on the Mississippi River, and there's a lurking fear in any river town that a person who goes missing after drinking might have fallen into the water and drowned. We just saw this with, I believe it was Riley Gaines in Nashville. So some wondered if Christina, confused and upset, accidentally tumbled off a riverbank or onto an icy creek on her walk, and her body was just never recovered. It's worth noting that authorities did search the river and land extensively, and no body ever turned up. But bodies can vanish in rivers, and the Mississippi is a really powerful one. So as the months went by without any sightings, this tragic accident theory lingered as a possibility. And I think my personal opinion is that this seems very plausible, probably the most plausible. But a less popular theory, at least among those who knew her, was that Christina perhaps left town intentionally. Could she have been so fed up with her life, her mental health struggles, or something else that she just decided to walk away and start fresh somewhere? People pointed to the fact that a warrant was issued for Christina's arrest after she went missing because she had an unresolved legal issue, which was a DWI-related charge for driving on a revoked license. So after she missed a court date in December of 2009, after she went missing, this technically made her a fugitive. However, this warrant came after she vanished, so it's unlikely to be a motive. If anything, it complicates her case because technically, if she were alive and hiding, she would know police are looking for her on that minor charge. Well, it's not really a minor charge. I think that's actually a pretty major charge. But more relevant is that Christina's mental state was pretty fragile. Her mother admitted Christina had been depressed at times, and she just had a baby. And I know, I'm sure a lot of you do too, as women and moms who listen to this podcast, that the 6 months after you have a baby, your hormones are just so unpredictable sometimes. So if Christina mixed heavy drinking with the meds that she was on, or without the meds if she wasn't taking them, then it could have caused extreme confusion or impulsivity. Some have mused that maybe during an impaired night or distressed state, Christina decided to leave town and start over, thinking that her family might be better off without her. It's a pretty heartbreaking thought, and one that those close to her strongly doubt, because Christina had no history of running away or leaving without notice. And she was also devoted to her baby. So that makes it pretty hard to imagine her just voluntarily staying away for this long. Even if she did make that decision in the heat of the moment that night, it's just hard to believe that she would stay gone, right? But still, when a case goes unsolved for years, every idea, even the far-fetched ones, get thrown on the table. Now, each one of these theories had proponents and detractors. The Hannibal police have stated that they are exploring all possible explanations from foul play to voluntary disappearance. It's one of those cases where nothing is what it seems on the surface. But of all the theories, one in particular quickly gained the most traction with Christina's family and ended up dominating the narrative, which was this idea that Christina was trafficked or taken against her will and possibly moved to another city. Within days of her disappearance, tiny glimmers of information emerged that seemed to point in that direction, and Cindy Young followed them into a labyrinth of leads centered on one city, Peoria, Illinois. As improbable as it sounded at first, Peoria, Illinois, which is a city about 100 miles away from Hannibal, soon became the focal point of the search for Christina. Just 2 weeks after Christina went missing, an informant came forward with a chilling story that caught police's attention. According to this informant, Christina had been kidnapped by a group of men in Hannibal who were involved in sex work and drugs, and these men had supposedly taken her to Peoria to force her into prostitution. This tip set off a flurry of investigative activity in late 2009 and gave Cindy a sliver of hope that her daughter might be alive, though in danger. Before long, sightings of Christina in the Peoria area began to trickle in. Several people reported seeing a young woman that they believed was Christina in Peoria and neighboring communities in the weeks and months after her disappearance. For instance, a waitress in Peoria told authorities that she was absolutely certain she saw Christina in the city just days after Christina vanished from Hannibal. She said that it was definitely her. She was 110% sure. Around the same time, a store clerk at a local grocery store called Tony's Market on Northeast Adams Street in Peoria also reported a possible encounter. The clerk's boss, Dumit Tamar, said that two of his employees saw a girl who strongly resembled Christina come into the store, and when Peoria police later showed them a missing person flyer, the employees thought it was for sure her. They even called the police at the time to report it, believing Christina might be hanging around that neighborhood. This area of Peoria was known to have some drug and prostitution activity, which made the tip feel plausible to those who believed in that trafficking theory. Cindy latched on to these reports and traveled to Peoria repeatedly herself. She printed up posters with Christina's face and blanketed downtown Peoria with those posters. She would drive around following any lead, talking to people on the street who might have seen her daughter. By May of 2011, a Hannibal-based private investigator working with the family also said that he believed Christina was alive in Peoria based on the many accounts that he had gathered. I cannot even imagine that as a mom searching for your daughter and searching for her in places like this, in this type of situation, like a possible sex trafficking ring. It's just unimaginable. Peoria police, for their part, approached the situation cautiously. They did assign a detective to liaise with the Hannibal investigators and Cindy's PI, and they opened a file to document every reported sighting or tip that came in. At one point, there were 13 separate reports in the Peoria police system of possible sightings of Christina. Officers checked out motels, strip clubs, truck stops, any places that one might expect to find a trafficking victim. They even went door to door in areas Christina was rumored to have been seen. One particularly intriguing incident came from within law enforcement itself. An officer in Peoria's narcotics unit reported that in February of 2010, while working a case, so this would have been about 3 months after she disappeared, he said he encountered a red-haired young woman who fled as soon as police tried to talk to her. Later, when he saw Christina's missing poster, he told colleagues the girl who ran looked very much like Christina Whitaker. Unfortunately, the woman in that incident was never caught, so they couldn't confirm her identity. Officer Doug Burgess of the Peoria PD described it saying, quote, "A female looking similar to Christina Whitaker ran from our officers after they initiated contact with her. There's absolutely no way to confirm whether it was her or not, but the picture looked like the girl who ran," end quote. So this anecdote, though unconfirmed, gave the family even more reason to focus on Peoria. The most sensational claim, perhaps, came from an anonymous woman who had been in the mental health facility in central Illinois. She told Cindy that during her stay, she met someone who claimed to be Christina Whitaker, and that this person confided she was being forced to work in the sex trade and not allowed to contact her family. It's a secondhand story and hard to verify, but Cindy took it very seriously. To Cindy, all these threads wove together into a clear picture that Christina was alive but being held against her will. In interviews, Cindy said she'd heard from multiple people that Christina told them she was not allowed to see her family or come back to Hannibal. That wording, "not allowed," convinced Cindy that her daughter truly was trapped by some bad actors. She firmly believes Christina was brainwashed into thinking that she could never go home and that that's why she hasn't reached out. Peoria law enforcement never dismissed the possibility, but they did urge caution. Officer Burgess pointed out that while Peoria certainly has its share of prostitution and drug activity, full-blown human trafficking rings are not commonly seen there, at least as of 2011. He said, quote, "As far as human trafficking, we don't see it all that much. I've never seen it in my career here." He also noted a challenge that many of the tips coming in were from people who were unwilling to identify themselves or they had questionable credibility. Police would hear things like, "Some girl said she saw Christina at X location," but then they couldn't track that witness down to verify any details. Still, the Peoria PD continued to cooperate with Cindy and her investigator. Burgess said that the detective assigned to the case would disseminate any new info to patrol officers in the areas that Christina was rumored to frequent, and they kept receiving occasional reports from the public about possible sightings. They diligently checked each one, but as Burgess said, he said, quote, "We have absolutely no confirmed accounts that she's in this area," end quote. By 2011, despite a handful of plausible sightings, there was no concrete proof that Christina was ever in Peoria. The Peoria-centered theory remains the most prominent working theory in Christina's case to this day. It's never been conclusively proven, but neither has it been disproven. So multiple witnesses with no obvious connection to each other all swore they saw the same young woman matching Christina's description in the Peoria area in late 2009 and 2010. Could they all have been mistaken, or is it possible that Christina really was there under a new terrifying chapter of her life? The lack of any verified sightings after 2010 raises difficult questions. If she was trafficked, would she remain under the radar for this long? Some experts note that victims of sex trafficking often have a limited window of years that they're kept in that life because many are killed or discarded when they're no longer seen as profitable, which is such a disturbing thought. By 2025, Christina would be 37 years old, and those who hold out hope maybe think that she escaped that situation, but due to her trauma or coercion, still hasn't contacted home. And then there's others who fear the worst, that whatever was happening in Peoria ended in tragedy that simply hasn't been uncovered yet. In the years following her disappearance, Christina's story periodically made the local news. Memorial coverage on anniversaries, fundraising events, and occasional updates on the investigation. But it wasn't until a decade later that her case received a new wave of national attention thanks to the true crime boom and one determined filmmaker. Enter Christina Fontana, an independent documentary producer. Fontana had actually met Christina's family way back in 2010, shortly after Christina went missing, while working on a different film about families of missing people. She was struck by Cindy Young's tenacity and the strange twists in Christina's case, and over the next 11 years, Fontana kept digging into the story. The result was a 6-part docuseries titled Relentless, which premiered on the Discovery Plus streaming platform in mid-2021. Relentless is a fitting title because it documents not only Christina's still unsolved disappearance, but also Fontana's own relentless journey to uncover the truth. Over more than a decade, Fontana amassed over 400 hours of footage, following leads and conducting interviews. She became deeply embedded with Christina's family, accompanying Cindy on her chases through Peoria and interviewing just about everyone connected to the case. The series portrays the maze of rumors, dead ends, and drama surrounding the case. Fontana explained that at first glance, Christina's story seemed like a straightforward, wrong place, wrong time crime. A young woman who had just had too much to drink, ran afoul of some predator or maybe an accident. But as she scratched beneath the surface, she found layers upon layers of family secrets, small town gossip, and conflicting narratives. In her words, she says, quote, "There are allegations thrown at almost everyone in Christina's life, including the family and the police, and nothing is what it seems," end quote. The docuseries does not shy away from those messy rumors that I've already discussed. It delves into the talk of drug connections, the informant theory, and even raises new questions. For example, it explores certain tensions within Christina's family that might have made her unhappy at home, implying that there was possibly a reason that she would leave willingly. But it also scrutinizes some people in Christina's orbit who might have had more knowledge than they let on. In short, Relentless casts a wide net of suspicion and leaves viewers wondering if the truth might involve a combination of factors. The series was full of surprising moments and revelations, according to Fontana, who teased that the latter episodes contained some pretty big revelations. She also claimed that once the first episodes aired, her phone was ringing off the hook with calls from people in Hannibal wanting to share information that they had about Christina's case. In Fontana's view, the publicity encouraged witnesses who had stayed silent for years to finally speak up, seeing others do the same. In that sense, the docuseries aimed to generate new leads, and Fontana has said that there have been new leads since it premiered, though she cannot disclose them publicly. However, not everyone was pleased with the docuseries. Notably, Christina's own family, the very people that the filmmaker worked with for years, ended up very frustrated and hurt by how the series portrayed the case. Cindy and her now teenage granddaughter, Alexandria, spoke to local media after the show aired and expressed that they felt it did more harm than good. Cindy was upset that Relentless seemed to suggest Christina was likely dead, whereas Cindy firmly believes that she's alive and out there somewhere. She felt that the tone could make the public or police less vigilant in looking for a living Christina. Alexandria, at 15 years old now, suddenly found herself and her grandparents the subject of local gossip and even bullying because of the things that were shown or hinted at in the docuseries. She described being harassed at school and even in the grocery store, with people saying very rude and horrible things about her family after they watched the show. It was a completely unexpected side effect. This girl, who had grown up without her mom, is now having to endure taunts and wild speculation from strangers about that very personal tragedy. And if there's anything I've learned in my years of talking about true crime, it is that tragedies can bring out the absolute best in people and the absolute worst in people. Cindy and Alexandria made it clear that they appreciate media coverage that can help find Christina, but Relentless left them feeling betrayed because the show made it look like she's dead, despite them feeling like she's very much still alive. Today, the search for Christina Whitaker is still active, not just in the hearts of her family, but in the files of the Hannibal Police Department. This isn't a cold case gathering dust in a file cabinet. Hannibal authorities insist that they have never closed the investigation. In fact, as of 2024, a detective named Jordan Freeling is specifically assigned to oversee it. He said, quote, "The case is still active and open and being investigated. Even 15 years later, tips continue to trickle in via Crime Stoppers lines, phone calls, and even internet submissions. So it is a relief to hear that the case is still active and ongoing, but my heart just breaks for her family to think that Alexandria is now 15 or 16 years old and is having to deal with not only the loss of her mom and having to grow up without her mom, she's also having to deal with online gossip, and not even just online, but like small town gossip. I mean, if they're approaching her and saying things and she's finding out about it, like, that is just horrific. And she has actually come out and said with a public plea saying, "I just want to be treated with respect like a human being with feelings. That's all I want," end quote. That's literally so sad. Now, despite everything, this young lady carries the torch of hope, too. She has never stopped believing that her mother might come back one day. As of 2025, the case of Christina Whitaker remains a perplexing puzzle. There have been no arrests, no confirmed sightings since those early months, and no physical evidence to tell us where she went or what truly happened in Hannibal on that November night in 2009. Was Christina the victim of a heinous crime, or did she, in a perfect storm of impaired judgment and unfortunate timing, slip away by accident? Or was she taken by someone, and she's still out there? The answers are still out there somewhere, and so is Christina, perhaps alive, perhaps not, but certainly not forgotten. This case eerily reminds me of Amy Bradley, and we've talked about this case before on the podcast, but there is actually a new docuseries coming out on Netflix called Amy Bradley is Missing. And if you remember, it's about a girl who disappeared from a cruise ship back in 1998. And there were theories about how she disappeared from this cruise ship. And then there was actually pictures that were circulating online that depicted what appears to be Amy in these pictures that were on like a sex trafficking type of website, like that she was clearly taken and thrown into this sex trafficking ring. And so there are a lot of parallels from this story to that story. So I can certainly see how that is a plausible scenario. I might even have to retell that story just to kind of refreshen that story. Refreshen? I think I just made up a word. Just so that I can refresh that memory in everyone's minds before this docuseries comes out. But I am interested in seeing it and seeing if they talk about these pictures, because there's some people who are like, no, that picture's not her. We've confirmed that this picture's not her. But I think anyone with two eyes and common sense can see the similarities and think it's definitely her. I mean, it's absolutely insane. If you want me to cover it again, I can. And I'd be happy to do it because I think it's a very important story that needs to be told, just about the dangers of traveling, the dangers of being abducted, and the dangers of human sex trafficking. So anyway, with all of that said, this story is heartbreaking. I hate that there's not an ending to it, that there's no solution or conclusion to this story, but at least I hope that it refreshes everyone's minds about who Christina Whitaker was. If you didn't already know who she was, then at least I'm, you know, introducing her to you all. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Mama Mystery. If you would like to request a case that you want to hear on the show, you can go to mamamystery.com and message me there. Now, with that said, have a great week. Stay vigilant. Stay curious. Mama Mystery out.
Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So, whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, and Emory Education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.